Hey, good morning, everybody. Today's daf is Ksubas Daf Lamed Tes. We left off on the bottom of Daf Lamed Chesam and Beis. We're going to begin again from Omar Abaye, about 5 lines from the end of the page. Today's shiur is sponsored by Dr. David Landerer in honor of his wife and children and Le'ilei Nishmas, his mother, Golda Bas Simcha Shalom. It is also sponsored by Seymour Gertz in memory of his father, Rabbi Yulei Ben Rabbi Eliezer Isaac Alav HaShalom, whose yard site is today, the Neshama Shav and Aliyah. We thank all of the sponsors very, very much for the sponsorship. So what we're going to talk about today is, first we're going to raise a question that Rava, or the Gemara is going to raise a question that Rava had raised, but it's going to have three different interpretations of what exactly Rava was asking. The words were, Yesh beger bakever, o ein beger bakever. Does a woman become a bogeres after she is dead? But what does that mean exactly? Legabe what halacha? What does it mean to become a bogeres after you're dead? So we're going to have three different versions of what that question is even about. Then the Gemara is going to talk about, what if a woman, Nebuchadnezzar was ma'anis a woman, and then she had erusin after the onus happened. So by the time they're omid bedin, she's already in arusa. Does the father still get the knas payment in such a case, now that she's no longer fully under his jurisdiction? Then the Mishnah on the bottom of Amud Aleph is going to talk about other payments. Up until now, we've been talking about knas, but that's not the only thing one has to pay if he's ma'anis a woman. There are other, or if he's mefata a woman, there are other payments as well. And the Mishnah is going to list three differences between ones and mefata, one of which is about how many different payments there are when one is ma'anis versus when one is mefata, a woman. Then the Gemara is going to define the tsar of onus, because one of those payments that you pay for being ma'anis is tsar. So what exactly is that tsar, and why doesn't that same tsar apply to a mefuta? And then on Amud Beis, the Gemara is going to discuss who can decide that the ma'anis or the mefata doesn't marry the girl, meaning the Torah says that one of the velosi of the isha, he's supposed to marry her, right? But who can say no thank you? Certainly the girl can say no thank you. Can the guy say no thank you? Can the girl's father say no thank you? Right? Who is allowed to decide that it's not going to happen? And then the Gemara is going to discuss, once the ma'anes has paid the knas, how does that affect the ksuba? Now they get married, so is there a full ksuba? Is it a ksuba's masayim, ksuba's mana, no ksuba at all, because he's already paid the knas for the onus and mefata? So let's begin again, 5 lines from the end of the page, on Daf Lamed Chesam Beis. So says Gemara, Amar Abaye, Ba'alehu Umesa. Let's say a man is ma'anes a nara, and then the nara dies before the father ever collected the money. So pater shenem ar lavi v'nasan lavi anara v'lo lavi mesa. Torah says that he pays the knas to the avi anara. Avi anara means not avi mesa. If she's already dead, then the father does not collect the knas. Says the Gemara, milsa t'pshita le'labaye mibay le'larava. That which was so pashut to Abaye, that if the nara dies before the amad b'din, that the father doesn't get the knas, Rava wasn't so sure about that, because Rava raised the following shaila. Now you'd expect the very next words to be that Rava raised the shaila, if the nara dies after the onus happens before the amad b'din, does the father get the knas or not? No, Rava's going to raise a more cryptic shaila, and it's the third version of this shaila that is actually the milsa t'pshita Abaye, where Rava has a suffix about. So we're going to have to be patient until we see how Milsa Dipshit Labaye Mibay Le Rava. Dibay Rava. Rava raised the following Shaila related to a mission that we're going to have in a few days from now, that if a Nara doesn't have a Amad Bedin and she becomes a Bogeres, so then the payment goes to her and not to her father, meaning she became a Bogeres before the Amad Bedin. So the guy was Ma'anis a Nara, but by the time they actually get to Beis Din, she's already a Bogeres, and then she collects her own money. The father doesn't collect the money. So Rava wasn't sure, what if instead of becoming a Bogeres, she dropped dead, and by the time they have the Amad Bedin together with the father, because she's no longer there, she would have been a bogeres. If only she were alive, she would have already become a bogeres. Yesh beger bakever, o ein beger bakever. Do we assume that she's considered as if she became a bogeres while she was alive, and therefore yesh beger bakever debna havi, and that with debna havi she became a bogeres, and therefore the father doesn't get the knas payment. She gets the knas payment, but she's dead, so therefore it passes on to her son. It goes to her child because he's the one that's yoresher. O dilma ein beggar bekever, udavia havi, or maybe ein beggar bekever, she never became beggar. She died a nara, so forever she is a nara. If a person dies young, you always think of themselves of them as that young person. They never had an opportunity to become old. So she died as a nara, and she is a nara forever, and therefore the father is the one that's entitled to the knas. That's what the Gemara's first understanding of Rava's Shaila is. Yesh beggar bekever, ein beggar bekever is a question of whether her father or her son receives the knas payment. Says the Gemara, that can't be the Shaila, because you know it's impossible. It's impossible that she ever has a son. If someone was ma'anis her when she was a nara, and she died while she was a nara, she could not have already had a child at that time. Because umima abra, can a woman become pregnant when she's a nara, or when she's a katana rather? Can she have a baby when she's a nara? Rabbi says the name Rav Nachman, the way Rashi understands, that there are three women that are permitted to be mishamish b'moch, meaning to put something inside that absorbs the zera, so that she will not become pregnant. That's how Rashi understands, that these three women are the only ones that are permitted to be mishamish b'moch. No one else is allowed to use this form of birth control, which is going to make the zera unusable. It's going to make the zera it's ineffective. So the Rishonim all ask in Rashi that why should it be usher for any woman to be mishamish b'moch? Women are not mitzuv and hashchasa zera, so a man is not allowed to be mashcha zera, but let the woman destroy the zera as soon as it enters her body. And furthermore, from Rashi, it sounds like that according to the Chachamim, it's usher to be mishamish b'moch even in these cases, because shomer p'sayim Hashem, as we're soon going to see, the Chachamim disagree, and the Chachamim are going to say, nah, everyone should not be mishamish b'moch, shomer p'sayim Hashem, meaning even the women who it's dangerous for are not allowed to be mishamish b'moch, because they have to trust that everything is going to be fine. Really? There's such a din that you have to do something dangerous because of Shomer P'sayim Hashem? We normally understand Shomer P'sayim Hashem means that don't worry, it's not an iser to do this kind of dangerous thing, because everybody does it in Kodesh Baruch Hu. As long as you just live your life normally, Kodesh Baruch Hu will protect you. But not that it's usser to be extra cautious. So the way Rashi makes it sound like it's going to be, according to the Chum, it's going to be usser to be extra cautious. And that's why a group of Rishonim all disagree with Rashi, and they say that Sholosh Nashim Shamshos B'moch doesn't mean they are permitted to be Mishamish B'moch, it means they are Mechuyavos to be Mishamish B'moch, that because it is dangerous, they are obligated to be extra cautious, extra careful, not to get pregnant. So either way, whether you say like Rashi, that there are three women that are mutter, or whether you say like the other Rishonim, that there are three women that are Mechuyav to be Mishamish B'moch, these are the three women. Ketana, Umuberes, Umenika. A ketana, a pregnant woman, and a nursing woman. Why is it dangerous for each of these women to become pregnant? Ketana, Shemet Tesabre V'tamos. If a ketana becomes pregnant, she's going to die. She can't handle the pregnancy. She's too young. Mu'uberes, Shemet If a pregnant woman becomes pregnant, we have to be choshesh that there's going to be another pregnancy that develops while she's already pregnant with this child, and that's going to push the initial fetus out of the way, and it's going to ruin it. It's going to destroy the original fetus. Now the Rishonim raised the question, the Ritva and others, that the Gemara Nida Daf Chav Zayin says that a pregnant woman can't become pregnant the second time. So the Ritva says that she can't. All that means is that she can't become pregnant with a vlad, but she can become pregnant with a vlad sheinu shel kayama, meaning she can't become pregnant with a viable fetus, but she could become pregnant enough to ruin the original pregnancy, and that's exactly what we're concerned about. And Menika, a nursing woman, is allowed to be mishamish that we're afraid if a nursing woman becomes pregnant, she's going to wean off the child that she already has from her milk, and then the child is not going to be nourished, he's not going to be cared for, it's going to be dangerous for the existing child, right? That's one of the questions in terms of family planning and birth control. So if there's for some reason there's the existing child needs extra attention and needs to be cared for in a particular way where the pregnancy will threaten that, so then that's one of the heterim, because the existing child is priority number one in terms of taking care of. Part of the mitzvah puravu is not only having them, it's raising them also, and making and caring for them and feeding them and making sure that they're healthy as well. But anyway, over here it's like a very direct thing that she might be gomel espina, and then the child's not going to be nourished. So veizui katana, and what age is a katana that we're saying she's mishamish b'moch so that she doesn't become pregnant? From the age of 11 to the age of 12. Pachas mikain, if she's less than 11 years old, yes. Yisrael Kainer more than 12 years old, Mishamesh Tzidach V'Aleches, then she doesn't have to be Mishamesh B'Boch. She could have Tashmish in the normal way. Divra Meir, that's where Meir Shita. Because once she's past the age of 12, or before the age of 12, she's not going to get pregnant anyway. After the age of 12, the pregnancy is fine. She'll be healthy. The Chum Omrim Achazo, the Achazo, and the Chum say whether she's 11 years old, 12 years old, whether she's a Muberis, whether she's a Menika, Mishamesh is Kedarko V'Aleches. She could have normal Tashmish. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu will have Rachmanos that these chashashos won't come to fruition. Mishum Shemar Shomer Psoim Hashem, because the Kodesh Baruch Hu watches over people who just live their lives in a simple, straightforward kind of way. The Maram Shif writes that Minashemayim Yirachemu means that she won't become pregnant, not that Minashemayim Yirachemu that she won't die from the pregnancy, because it would turn out that if it was Minashemayim Yirachemu that she won't die from the pregnancy, then the Gemara's Halkasha falls by the wayside. The Gemara's Halkasha is, how could it be that a girl dies as a Nara and she already has a child? She can't get pregnant as a Katana, but if the Chacham hold, yeah, she'll get pregnant and in a Shemayim Yirachemu that she'll live, then yeah, then it can be that she'll have a child. The Gemara's whole point was to ask that it's impossible for her to have a child. So in a Shemayim Yirachemu means that she won't become pregnant at the age of 11. You could assume that our Kodesh Baruch will have Rachmanus and won't make her pregnant. But bottom line is, you see from the Brisa that there is no such mitzius of a Katana becoming pregnant and a girl having a child when she is a Nara. So how could it be that Rav's Shaila is, does the Yerusha go to her daughter, her son, or does Yerusha go to, does the Knas go to her father? It's not, there is no son. It can't be that she had a son if she died when she was a Nara. V'chitem or diabrik, she Nara. Maybe you're going to tell me, no. She died when she was a Nara, but she also became pregnant when she was a Nara. So the entire pregnancy was within that time period while she was a Nara, after she's already past the age of Katnus, and that's why she was able to become pregnant. She also gave birth when she was an Ara. So it says, well, it's impossible, because could a girl have an entire pregnancy last only 6 months? The entire time period from when she becomes an Ara until she becomes a Bogeres is only 6 months. So it's impossible for her to get pregnant and have a baby all while she is an Ara. That can't happen within a 6 month time period. The shortest pregnancy that the Gemara assumes can happen is like 6.5 months. I mean, it can't happen within 6 months, it can happen in just over 6 months, because the Gemara assumes that there's Yoledes L'Shiva and Yoledes L'Tisha, and Yoledes L'Shiva is Yoledes L'Mekutayin. That if you have a 7 month pregnancy, it doesn't mean 7 months, it means into the 7th month. But if you have a 9 month pregnancy, it's 9 full months. For whatever the Matthias is nowadays, that's what the Gemara assumes. So since you have this possibility of a 6 plus month pregnancy, yeah, but the maximum amount of time between Naras and Bagrus is 6 months dafka. It's not 6 plus months. So it's dafka 6 months exactly. So, well, it's still going. It's 6 months exactly, not 6 plus months. So that's the assumption that it's impossible for her to get pregnant while she's a Nara and have the baby while she's a Nara. No, maybe when we say it's 6 months, it means a minimum of 6 months between Naras and Bagras. No, it says Ein Bey, Naras and Bagras, Ela Shisha Chadashim. That means maximum, it does not mean minimum. So now we have to say, we have to come on to a second possibility of what exactly Rava was asking. When he was asking, Ishbeger Bekever, Ein Beger Bekever, he could not have been asking, does the son get the Knas? Because there is no son to get the knas. What Rava was asking was the following: a person is ma'ani senara, and the girl dies, and then the father has amad bedin with the rapist. And now the time comes that if she would have been alive, she'd be a bogeres. Yesh beger bekever upaka av, meaning maybe she becomes a bogeres bekever to the extent that the father isn't entitled to the knas, because the knas of a bogeres goes to herself, even if the actual onus happened while she was a Nara. So we hear that she became a Bogeris after she died. The father loses his zuchus in the Knas. And therefore, not that the son is going to get it, there is no son, nobody will get it, because she's the one that's entitled to it. She's not here anymore. Nobody gets it. Odilma ain beggar bekever. Or maybe we don't say that she becomes a bogeris in the kever, velo paka'av, and therefore the father is still entitled to the knas payment because she died in Nara, so she remains in Nara forever. For all eternity, she's frozen as a Nara, and therefore the father is entitled to the knas payment. Or alternatively, a third understanding of what Rava's Shaila was. Mar Baravashi, boy lohachi, misa osa bagris, o ain osa bagris. not a question of if she'd be alive today, she'd already be a Bogeres. Maybe automatically, as soon as a girl dies as a Nara, at that moment she becomes a Bogeres. Meaning, Naras lasts until she moves on to the next stage in life. Next stage in life could either be 6 months later when she becomes a Bogeres, or when she drops dead. And if she drops dead, she becomes a Bogeres right away. And therefore, that will be Mafkia, the Zchus of the father. That's the Milsad Pshita Leil Abaye, Mi Bayi Bayi Leil Rava. Because Abaye wanted to know that if a guy is Ma'anis a Nara and then she dies, does the father get the Knas? So now Abaye said, of course not, because La'avi anara velo la'avi mesa, the father's not entitled to the Knas. The Gemara says, yeah, Rava wasn't so sure about that, because Rava asked, Misa osa bagras oein osa bagras, if she dies as a Nara, do we treat her like a Bogeres in that the father does not get the Knas, or do we still treat her like a Nara, and the father does get the Knas? So that's the line, where Milsa depshita le Abaye, mi bayi bayi le Rava, and what's the answer? Teku. The Gemara leaves it unresolved. Okay, so now the Gemara discusses, a man is Ma'ani Senara, and and instead of becoming a Bogeres or dying or something like that happening before the Hamad Bedin, she has Erisin. So, Baimine Rava Ma'abai, Ba'aleha Vinis Arsa Mahu. What if she had Erisin before the Hamad Bedin? So she's still an Ara, but now she has a husband. So I'm like, Miksiv Nasan Levia Nara Asher Lo Arusa. Well, does the Pasuk say you give to the Knas payment to the father of a girl as long as she doesn't have Erisin? No, the Pasuk just says, that as long as she's still a Nara, you pay the father. I don't care if she has Erisin or not. So the Taimech, so says Rava back to Abaye, according to you, that if you're Ma'anis a Nara that doesn't have Erisin, you pay the Knas to the father, even if she subsequently has Erisin. Haditanya, Ba'aleha V'nises Li'atzma, Miksiv Nasan Levi Anara Shelo Nesua. Well, everyone seems to agree that if she has Nisuin, then she gets the Knas, and the father does not get the Knas. Doesn't say that in the Pasuk either. Never says in the Pasuk that you give to the Avi Anara if she didn't have Nisuin, then you give to the Avi Anara. No, it says you just give to the Avi Anara. And yet everyone agrees that if she has Nisuin, then the father's no longer entitled to it. So I'm asking a reasonable question. Maybe if she has Erisin, the father's no longer entitled to it. The Pasuk doesn't have to spell it all out. So it says, no, Hachiash, you cannot compare having Nisuin to having Erisin. Hasam, if she has Nisuin, Ho'olu Bagrus Matsiyum Rishosav, we know that a girl becoming a Bogeres takes her out of the Rishus of the father, legabe everything, knasa, maisa yadeha, all the things, the rights that a father has in the daughter, unisuin motzim Rishus av, and similarly, if a girl has nisuin, the father no longer has any rights for afaras nedarim or any of the other rights in the daughter, so ma bagras ba'aleha ubagra li'atzma, so just like we know the halacha is that if a girl becomes a Bogeres, she's entitled to the knas, because it's only the father only gets the knas of a nara, saf nisuin ba'aleha. Nisuin is comparable to Bagrus in that it totally is Motzia Mirashus Aviha. So therefore, just like if she becomes a Bogeres, the father doesn't get the Knas. If she becomes a Nisua, the father doesn't get the Knas. And that everyone agrees to. My Shaila is Ela Erisin Mikamafki Mirashus Da'av Legamri. The father, when it comes to Erisin, it's not Motzia entirely from the Rishus of the father. Hatna Narim Rasa Vio Balim Afirulan. Because a Nara Murasa, it's true, her husband plays a role, but her father still plays a role in the Afaras Nedarim. The only way you can have Afaras Nedarim for a Nara Hamurasa is if both her husband and the father are made for the Nedarim. So you see that she's not completely removed from Rishus Avia, and therefore it still makes sense that even after she has Eris in the Knasa Avia, that the father should be entitled to the Knas. L'chora, the Gemara didn't have to bring that from the case of Mefirin Nedareha. In all of Dine Mamanus, Maisi Yadeha, Kiddusha, if she gets divorced from her, it's still in the father's jurisdiction. All the Dine Mamanus still belong to the father. The Gemara didn't have to say, L'chora, because he has a chelek in the Afaras Nedarim, that's why she's still considered Bereshus Avia. He has a lot of things in her. He still has all the Dine Mamanus in her. That's why she's Bereshus Avia. So the Ritva suggests that the Gemara is trying to say that it's so obvious that every mammon related issue, she's still Birshus Avia, but by Afaras Nedarim, she's not, even by Afaras Nedarim, she's not Legami outside of his Rishus. He still has a Chelek in Rishus Avia. So, meaning the Gemara is trying to highlight that even Afaras Nedarim, but in a Chinami, the real point is that she's still in the father's jurisdiction for all of Dine Mamanus. Okay, so now the Gemara, we move on to the next Mishnah. Up until this point, we've been talking about Knas payments, but that's not the only thing one has to pay if he's Ma'anis or Mefata. mafata a woman. Ha mafata, a person who's mafata a woman nosin shlosh dvarim has to make three payments. Va ones arba'a, where someone who's ma'anis a woman has to make four payments. Ha mafata nosin boshes, the embarrassment that she suffers as a result of that bia. Upegam, and the decrease in her value if she were sold as a shivcha in the shuk, now that she's no longer a basula. Uknas, and the knas payment of chamishim shekel kesef, kesef yishkel kumara basulos. Most of the onus pays all three of those things, and in addition to that, shenosein esatzar. He also has to pay for the tsar that was caused by that bia, in addition to those three things. And the Gemara is going to talk about why a mefata, what is this tsar, and why doesn't the mefata have that tsar? Why doesn't a mefuta have that tsar? Ma bein onus l'mefata? What is the whole difference between onus and mefata? So the Mishnah is going to list three of them, but the first one is onus nosin esatzar, mefata einu nosin esatzar. That the onus pays the tzar, the mefata does not pay the tzar. Tiferes Yisrael, the Mishnah points out that line is extremely repetitive. We just said the whole first part of the Mishnah was that mefata you pay three things and onus you pay four things. The same three that the mefata pays plus one more, and that's called tzar. So then you have to tell me again, and the only difference between onus and mefata as far as payment is concerned is tzar. So Tiferes Yisrael is saying that that it's being mechadesh that you never pay tzar to a mefata even if she actually had tzar in the bia. Meaning there are two things. First of all, that the stam is that the mefata doesn't have tzar, the onus does have tzar. But what if the mefata says, the mefuta says, I do have tzar, it caused me tzar, however we're going to define tzar, she says it caused me that pain. So that's what this line in the Mishnah is telling me, no, it's a klal that a mefuta never receives a tzar payment for the pitui. So ha'onus nose, and then the second chilik is ha'onus nose miyad. The onus pays the kenas right away, even before he marries her, because the pasuk says v'nasan isha shochev melaviyah nar chamishim kesef, and only after that it says velosia liisha v'mefata. But a person is mefata girl likisha yotzi. He only pays the kenas payment after he decides that he doesn't want to marry her. Now the word likisha yotzi normally means when he divorces her, but the Gemara is going to point out he's not married to her. What does that mean when he divorces her? We have to get married first. So no, it means when he decides that he's not going to marry her, then he pays that kenas payment. But if he marries her, he does not pay it. Another chilik, ha'onus shosa batzitzo, the onus is forced to remain with the woman regardless whether she's a balas mum, whether he doesn't want to marry her, it doesn't matter. Ha'mefata imratza lahotzi motzi, but the mefata, if he wants to divorce her, he's allowed to divorce her and she can't stop him from divorcing her. And similarly, if he doesn't want to marry her, he has the right to choose not to marry her. So ketsa shosa batzitzo, what does it mean that the onus is shosa batzitzo? Regardless of how unattractive she is and how uninterested he is in marrying her, he's got to marry her anyway. What if he finds that there's a dvar erva, she's a surah to him, she was mezana with someone else after they got married. Oh, she'in ru'iyah lava b'Yisrael. Or maybe there's some sort of issue that she has, that she's not allowed to marry a regular Jewish guy. So then ain't a rasha l'kaim, but then he's not allowed to marry her. Shenemar v'lo siya li'isha, isha ru'iyah lo. That it has to be an isha ru'iyah lo, it has to be a woman that halachically, it's viable for him to marry. So now, says Gemara, tzar demai, what exactly is this tzar that she has at the bia that he's paying her? Raises the question, what do you mean? It's pashut. Everyone knows that every woman has tsar when the basulim is removed, meaning the girl is a basula, so it's breaking the basulim. That's always going to cause tsar. People, girls get sick from it sometimes. So what's it asking tsar of demai? So Tosus writes that because of the taivas tashmish, she doesn't feel that tsar of the bi'ila immediately. She only feels that tsar afterwards, meaning afterwards she's sore and she's in pain. But at the time of tashmish, while it may not be perfectly comfortable for her, she doesn't feel that intense tsar at the time of tashmish, it's the after effects. And the after effects is considered to be a grum bialma because it doesn't happen in the moment. So the Gemara wants to know, so what is the real tsar? So Amar Avud Shmuel, tsar shechavat al gabe karka. It's the fact that he was ma'anisir, so he threw her on the ground, and to be manhandled like that is a tsar. So maskar bizera elameat, chavat al gabe shiran, achinami depater. So if he threw her on the softest bed and she didn't hit the ground hard, he didn't didn't body slam her or something, so that means that there's not going to be any tzar. V'chitei machinami, unless you say, yeah, he machinami. If he was gentle enough to put her down on a bed, then there wouldn't be no tzar. But v'atani, we have a brisa that tells us that Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda Amar Mishum Rabbi Shimon Onas Einu Mishalim Es Tzar Mnei Shesofali Tzar Tachas Baila. That Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda holds the name Rabbi Shimon that someone who's ma'anis nara doesn't pay the tzar because anyway she's going to experience that tzar tachas baila. Amrulo, and the Chum said back to him, Einu Doma Nevelas Banos Nevelas Bratza. No, she does have tzar because although she might feel that tzar anyway when she gets married, but the level of tzar when she's being forced into it is much different than the level of tzar than when she's a willing participant. But you see from Rabbi Shimon when he says Mepnei Shesofel Tzar Tachas Baila that it's not a tzar of Chavat Al Gabe Karka because you can't say Sofel Tzar Tachas Baila with Chavat Al Gabe Karka. Meaning this question, Pashtos of Chitei Machinami, is not going on the idea that that maybe you know we're Maskev Arbizera that maybe Chavat Al Gabe Shira in Machinami Depater. It's asking on the very basic idea, the definition of tzar that we suggested. We suggested that the definition of tzar is chavat al gabe karka. This brisa makes it clear that that is not the definition of tzar, because the brisa says it's the kind of tzar that she's going to feel anyway when she gets married. No husband is going to be chavitar al gabe karka, so it's not an automatic tzar that she's going to feel. So therefore, the Gemara says a second possibility of what the tzar is. Elam Rav Nachman Rav Baravua tzar shel pisuk raglayim. It's the tzar of separating her legs at the time of the bia. V'cheinu omer, and we could prove that that's called the tzar from a pasuk in Yecheskel, because the pasuk tells us that the navi is being mochiach klal Yisrael v'tefaski es raglayich l'chol over, that we did have a dezara, but the expression that he uses is that we were mizana with Elohim Acherim, with other gods, and we did have a dezara like an isha zona that is not at all discriminating in terms of who she has bia with, even though it causes her tzar. So we're saying that even though it causes us tzar and it causes us nothing but trouble to do avodah zarah, we're open to every single avodah zarah in the world. So now I understand what Rabbi Shimon says, that sofel tzar tachas baila, because she's going to have pisuk raglayim tachas baila as well, and that tzar is shayich even by a bu'ula. So l'shita, so there's no chiyuv of paying the tzar. The Achronim struggle with the question, why is Sofel Tzar Tachas Baila a reason not to pay the Tzar? Meaning, if a person is going to feel pain, you know, from doing a certain activity, let's say a person, you know, is a boxer, right? So they get punched in the face all the time. So if I see them on the street, can I just go punch them in the face? I don't know if they're Tzar, it's Sofel Tzar in the ring anyway. You're going to feel the Tzar anyway. So what? They're going to feel the Tzar anyway. You're causing them the Tzar right now. So Pashas is like the Chacham Tzvi writes. Chacham Tzvi writes that the Tzar of Pisuk Raglayim only happens on the Bia Rishona. That after the Bia Rishona, it's not called Tzar of Pisuk Raglayim. So it's only going to happen once in her life. The fact that you're the one that did it to her, so you're the one that has to pay the tzar. It's not like just, oh, anyway, this is a person that suffers that kind of tzar all the time, so don't worry. There's no such halacha that just because someone suffers a certain kind of tzar all the time, that you're allowed to cause them that kind of tzar. So frankly, Mar, but wait a second. If the tzar is pisuk raglayim, yachi mefuta nami, then that same tzar should apply to a mefuta. So Rav Nachman, Rav Baravua, mashal de mefuta l'madav doma, l'adam sham l'chaveru, karash yiran, shilivi yipater. No, by a mefuta, she agreed to it. So even though it causes her tzar, it's like someone saying, here, tear my jacket, and don't worry, you won't have to pay for it. So I'm mochel in advance, so you don't have to pay for it. So if the girl says that she's interested in having the tashmish, even though she didn't verbalize that she's mochel on the tzar, but by virtue of the fact that she was interested in the tashmish, that tells me that she is mochel on the tzar. So, shali, tavon, wait, that's not a good mashal. If I tell you can tear this jacket, that's because I own this jacket. It belongs to me. But the tzar payment goes to the father. How could she be mochel? That which belongs to the father. Elam rav nachan rav ravua, pikchol shaben omros mefuta in latzar. That the women that are pikchos tell us that they don't feel tzar pisuk raglayim when it's a mefuta. So therefore, only for whatever reason, only by an onus do you have the tzar of pisuk raglayim. But kachazin disa, what do you mean? We see that a mefuta has tzar of pisuk raglayim. So Amrabaya, Amrli Ames, Abaya says that Aim told me, it wasn't his biological mother, but the woman who raised him, that the tzar of pisuk raglayim, it exists by a mefuta, but it's kemay chamimi al reshi tekarcha. It's like if you're a little cold and you go into a hot shower, so the first, the heat of the water may cause you a little discomfort at first, but ultimately it's a hana'a. Ultimately, you get pleasure from the fact that you're taking a hot shower. So that, but when it comes to a girl that's an anusa, there is no hana'a. It's all tsar. Whereas it comes to a mafuta, there may be a little bit of pain of pisuk raglayim, but that's just a hechitim to have the hana'as tashmish. Rava Amar Amarli Bas Rav Chista. Rava says that Rav Chista's daughter told him that ki rivda du kasilta. It's like when you're getting bloodletting, that apparently bloodletting was a very pleasurable experience, but the needle hurts a little bit on its way in. So that's the kind of tzar. It's not real tzar. Why is Rava talking about this with Bas Rav Chista? Because it was his wife, right? In each case where we talk about this one is talking with that, so it's obviously a family member. Rav Papa Amar Amarli Bas Abba Surah, that Bas Abba Surah, again, Papa's wife said, "Kinama akusha bekinchi." It's like the tzar of eating coarse bread on the palate, where the hana of the achila ultimately will overpower the tzar. Meaning, the point is that by a mufuta there is some level of tzar, but it's not halachically defined as tzar because it's immediately overpowered by the hana that follows. Whereas by an ones, the tzar is the tzar, and therefore you have to pay for that. Ones osim miyad mufatul chshioti. We then said in the Mishnah that the onus, you pay the knas right away, and the mafata only when you divorce her. Look, Shiyotzi, Ishtohi, what is she, his wife, that he's divorcing her? He was mafata the girl. He never was makadish the girl. So Rabbi Ema Luk Shalo Yichnos. It doesn't mean to say Luk Shiyotzi, it means when he decides that he's not going to marry her. So only at that point does he pay the knas. Tanya Nami Achimah of Abraisa, it says that even more explicitly. It says, Av Bisham Ramafut Amafata, no saying Luk Shalo Yichnos, but that even though Mefata only gives the knas payment, likishelo yichnos, there it is explicitly, when he decides not to marry her, but the Bosh Zemigam, that he gives right away. It has nothing to do with whether he marries her or not. And then the Brisa said, Vecharonis Vechar Mefata, that both the onus and the mafata, both she and her father could say, we're not interested in this shidduch, that we're not interested in her getting married to this guy. So Bishla Mufuta, I understand very well the Mufuta, both she and her father have the right to say, we don't want it. Ksiv imma ein yima ein avia, because the Pasuk says, imma ein yima ein avia, that if the father refuses, ein li ala avia, I would only know that the father has the right to refuse. He atzma minayin, how do I know she has the right to refuse? Tamalomar yima ein mikal makom, that the Torah says, a double lashon, ma ein yima ein, so that tells me not only the father, but she also has the right to refuse the marriage. Ela ones, Bishla ihi, when it comes to ones, I understand she can refuse the marriage because ksiv velo tihia liisha, from the lashon of tihia, it implies midaita, that she has to be interested in the marriage. Elavia minalan, how do I know that the father can refuse the shidduch if with the man that was ma'anis his daughter? So Rabbi Yishlei chote niskar, it's a svara that the father could refuse the shidduch because if the man was not ma'anis her, the father could refuse the shidduch. She's a nara, so the father has the right to the shidduch, to take the shidduch or not to take the shidduch. So now that he's ma'anisir, you should be able to do bal karcha of the av. The chote shouldn't be niskar. He shouldn't have extra rights just because he was ma'anisir. So Rava Amar kalvachomer. Rava says it's a kalvachomer that the father can prevent the shidduch. Umam mefata shelo avar el al das avia bilvad. By a case of mefata, all you didn't do anything against the girl's will. You just went against the father's will. He wasn't interested in his daughter sleeping with this guy, so bein he bein of yichol la'akev, and yet both the girl and the father have the right to prevent the shidduch. Ones shavra al dasa via vial das atzma, an ones where the man violated not only the father's will but also the girl's will because she wasn't interested in the bia lo kolshkein. So then, for sure, the father should have the right to prevent the shidduch from going through. Rava lo amar k'Abaye. Rava didn't want to say like Abaye's answer of lo yehi chote niskar, that it's all about the idea that we just don't want the chote to be niskar, we just don't want the sinner to benefit, even to come mishalim knas, because the fact that he's paying a knas lav chote niskaru makes it that he's not benefiting. Meaning the fact that he has to pay the knas is enough to make it that the avera was not beneficial to him, that the avera caused him a loss. So you don't have to say that. So it could be that in a chinami legabe certain elements he has certain rights now that he's manisur that he didn't have before, namely to marry her shalom b'dasavia, to marry her against the father's objections. But overall, you know, when you tally up, you know, his gains and losses after being ma'aniser, the losses outweigh the gains. The gains are that he's allowed to marry her without the father's permission, but the losses are that he has to pay all these payments. So it's not chotin iskar anyway. So that's why Rava didn't want to say like Abaye's answer that it's shalei chotin iskar, and that's why the father has the right of refusal of the shidduch. Why didn't Abaye want to say like Rava's answer that it's a kal v'chomer? Abaye lo amar k'Rava. Abaye didn't want to say like Rava that he learned from a kal v'chomer because he holds that there's a pircha in the kal v'chomer. Mefata ti'u matzi ma'akev. Even the mefata herself could, by mefata, the guy himself could say he doesn't want to marry her. So then, if the guy himself who took advantage of this girl could say he's not interested in marrying her, so it stands to reason that all of the players, that all of the people involved, have the right to say they don't want the shidduch, the father, the girl, and the guy. But onus, but by a case of onus, where the guy can't say, I don't want this shidduch, I'm not interested, well then you should have thought about that before you raped her. What do you mean that you don't want this shidduch? You have to. So then, maybe the father doesn't have the right in that situation either. So you can't make a kal v'chomer from a fata to onus. So totally different circumstances. So that's as far as onus and fata. Now the Gemara says, okay, but how does all of this affect a ksuba, right? If when a man is ma'anis, a woman is paying the 50 shekel. So what if, so lo siya li'isha, they're going to get married. Good, so now they're married, and now what happens if he dies? What happens if they get divorced? What happens with the ksuba? So Tanya Idoch, we have a braisa, that onus nosin miyad. Even though we said that an onus pays the knas to the father immediately after the onus, kishiyotzihu ein la alav klum. When he divorces her later, he doesn't have to pay the ksuba. We don't say that... since the knas went to the father and didn't go to her, so she's entitled to the ksuba, because the kes of knas is in place of the ksuba, and therefore the chum were simply not masakin a ksuba to a girl who already, the guy was ma'aniser, and she already therefore received the knas payment, or the father already received the knas payment. There was never a ksuba that was instituted for her. So ask the Gemara, kishe yotzi, mi matzi mapaklo, what are you talking about when he divorces her? He's not allowed to divorce her. It's a state in pasuk, lo yuchal l'shalcha kol Yamav. You're not allowed to divorce her. The man is ma'anis a girl. Lo si alisha. You have to marry her, and you're never allowed to divorce her. So you mean shiotzi? So ema. So we have to say kishatetzi. He ain la love klum. If she's toveya get. If she says, you know what, this marriage is not working out. Right. One could have predicted that the marriage with the guy that was ma'anis her might not work out. So if she says at a certain point in time, you know what, this guy's a bad guy. I'm not interested in staying married to him. So then ain la love klum. Then he doesn't have to pay the ksuba at that point. But obviously he can't make the choice to divorce her. It has to be her choice to get a divorce. So mace, and then the Gemara brings the hemshich of the braisa, and if the guy dies after he marries her, so yatzah kesef knasa b'ksubasa. He also doesn't have to pay the ksuba because he already paid the knas. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yudomer, yesh l'ksuba mana. No, she does get a ksuba, even though he paid the knas, a ksuba's mana, she gets a ksuba like a bu'ula, a ksuba like an almana. So b'maikam ifgi, what exactly is the machlokas between the chum and Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda? So says my Rabbanan Sabri, time in my takin Rabbanan Ksuba. Why is it that Rabbanan were misaking Ksuba in general for all women? Kadesh lotei kalabein of lotzia, in order to make it more difficult for the husband to divorce the wife, that he should have to think twice before he gets divorced because it's going to cost him a lot of money. But v'hal lo matzi mapikla. But in the case of a guy who's ma'anis a girl, so he can't divorce her anyway. You don't need to be misaking Ksuba because of the whole purpose of takaris Ksuba is lotei kalabein of lotzia. He can't be motzi her anyway. It's he's got to stay married to her anyway. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yudu says that we're misaking her ksuba because even though he can't divorce her, hanami mitzar la adam rehilo bein alach. If he wants a divorce, he'll just drive her crazy until she says that she wants a divorce. So meaning he's not allowed to initiate the divorce, but he could be a terrible husband and he could be someone who's a very annoying person to live with until she wants a divorce. So he's going to think twice about doing that, so that because he's going to have to pay a ksuba. Now we already saw that there's machlokas tonight back on Daf Yudam and Aleph whether ksuba is min haTorah or it's only min derabanan. But over here we're talking about a bu'ula l'chala deos. The ksuba is only min derabanan. That's why it's my time at takinu rabanan ksuba. The whole issue is about a takanas chachamim, right? A ksuba's pesula might not be a takanas chachamim. That might be a din daraisa. But it's also interesting that the Gemara raises this svara that if you have a marriage where he can't be makarish her bal karcha Karcha anyway. He's not allowed to divorce her Bal Karcha. So then the Takanas Ksuba is not as important. It's not as critical that they have a Ksuba. So this passing by the Ramah and Shulchan Aruch, a lot of people don't realize, but it's a source of comfort for a lot of people when they discover it. There is a halacha, the Gemara is going to say a little later in the Masechta, that it's aser for a couple to stay together without a Ksuba. That if they don't have a Ksuba, if the Ksuba is possible, they lost the Ksuba or whatever, they're not allowed to stay living in the same house together. So why is that? Because without a Ksuba, it's going to be Kalabain of Lotzia. So the Ramah writes, yeah, that was before Takanas Rabbeinu Gershom. But once Rabbeinu Gershom said that you're not allowed to be Megarish Nisha Bal Karcha anyway, so it's not really in the husband's control to just, you know, end the marriage, because it can't be Megarish Nisha Bal Karcha anyway, a couple is allowed to live together without a Ksuba. So, okay, we try not to. We try to make sure that they have a Ksuba. But a lot of times you have like that, that a couple's living together without a Ksuba. They realize, I remember Talmud called me that he lost his Ksuba. Can we write a new one? I said, no problem. You have to write the Ksuba Dirksa, where they got married. They got married in Rockley, New Jersey. So I called up a friend of mine. I said, you got married in Rockley. I was at your wedding. Can you check Rav Tzvi Berkowitz's Masechta Kedushin? Tell me how he spelled Rockley, New Jersey in the Ksuba. So I'll get right back to you. And then I didn't hear back from him for a while. So I called him back, and he said, we can't find our Ksuba, right? So they don't have to feel guilty that they lost their Ksuba. So, okay, the Ramah, you know, we rely on the Ramah in those situations, that if you can't be Megarish or Bar Kalacha anyway, so then the whole din, that you're not allowed to live together without a Ksuba, doesn't apply. Okay, Be'ez Hashem, we'll pick up with Onas Shosef HaTzitzah tomorrow.